You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online all over God's magnificent green planet. This planet that I happen to be part of right now, anyways.
That's right. That's
you
awesome.
Do, Ellen.
I love it. I love
so,
it.
So
I love
tell
it.
Our yes, listeners so, how they can tune in online.
World Wide Web, www.1510wwbc. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Or if you'd like an archive of the show, those are all downloadable. They are available there on the archive section, which is the on-demand section there on 1510wwbc.com. And then, of course, we share it on all of our social media pages, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, or Sita Media Inc., which is also our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And we have the show as well as a little blog about what the excerpt is. Of course, on all our social media, you can search by topic or name or by date as well. And we've had fantastic guests. I can't believe, Sita, it's like rounding 15 years. I think it's this month or next month is the official 15 years that we've been on radio.
Well, you keep track of that, my friend.
I do keep track of that. You figure two guests every week for 52 weeks times 15 years, that's a lot of people. A lot of topics.
Well, we couldn't do it without you, so thank you.
Well, thank you. We certainly couldn't do it without you and all of your networking and social media.
Thank God I have a good husband.
Yeah, that's right.
So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here on Mondays, my co-host Ellen O'Neill and myself. Danny Whiting runs our board for us, and Ali Tambor is one of our regulars that now has become part of our show. It's kind of nice to look there and see you, Ali. It's
thank
comforting.
You.
We speak
good.
To
you're pe- good.
Thank you. We speak to people here in Brevard County, Florida, in the state of Florida, in the United States, all over the world, whether people want to sell a book, buy a book, write a book, learn how to save money, learn how to spend money, open a business, run for office. Some people like to take care of God's planet in the form of taking care of the environment, the Indian River Lagoon. Whatever it is, we give people a platform and a chance to come on our show and chat with us. And today's no different. We have two awesome guests today. The first one is a gentleman who's calling in from Toronto. His name is Dr. Banti Saranapella, and he is fondly known as the Urban Monk. He is a teacher of meditation. He advises the police force in Peel, Toronto. He's a public speaker. So many wonderful things. He wears a lot of hats, and I'm proud that he is my friend and a friend of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. He also just wrote a book that he's going to talk to us about, meditation as a healing technique and, you know, everything about being kind and mindful of God's magnificent planet. And our second segment is going to be with Shan Rose, and she has a master's degree in public administration, and she is a founder of a nonprofit, Change for the Community, in Orlando, Florida. But our first guest is keyed up and ready to go. So Dr. Banti Saranapella, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, thank you, Sita, for having me on your show. It's absolutely a great joy to be here with you and your friends. Just to have this friendly and kindful conversation with you.
Thank you. And for our listeners who are tuning in, Dr. Banti Saranapella is the founder of Canada a mindful and kind nation. And you know, I've been to Canada so many times, and the people are very nice and kind.
I think
you have a lot to do with it, my friend, because mm-hmm. you're spreading the mindfulness and the thoughtfulness and the joy and teaching a lot of us so many things that it transfers onto other cultures and other people. So talk to us this morning a little bit about recently what you've been doing, because I know the last time you called in on the show, you were not an author at that time. So bring us up to speed. What's going on with you and all the wonderful things you're doing in Canada and all over the world?
I do actually many things. As you mentioned, I wear many hats. I do all this to help people around the world. Although I'm a Buddhist monk, but I'm not here to convert people. I just love people. I want humanity to be a beautiful one, and humanity can be beautiful only when humans, and no matter what faith tradition they belong to, what race they belong to, what political background they have, we have to understand the fact that we all are human beings. As human beings, there is a beautiful way to live happily and peacefully. And that is what I call the universal principle known as the kindfulness. It's a new word we have added into English, the English language. It comes from two words, kindness and mindfulness. So I'm just kindly encouraging people to embrace this kindfulness for the greater well-being of the world in two steps. First step is be mindful to be kind to yourself. Being kind to yourself is very important. And the second step is be mindful to be kind to others. So if you can't be kind to yourself, you can't be kind to others. So I give it a beautiful metaphor or parable that is with the empty teapot, you can't serve tea to your guests. So in order to serve tea to your guests, first you need to fill the teapot. So then you can serve everyone. So in the same way, before being kind to others, be mindful to be kind to yourself. Being kind to yourself is very important. So when you become kindful, that means you love yourself, you don't hurt yourself, you don't hurt others. You just do the act of kindness every day. And so in my life, this is what I do. I do counseling, spiritual counseling, as a way of showing my kindfulness. And I do little acts of kindness every day, at least by making a cup of tea for my guests. And then the coming Saturday, actually, I will be walking on the streets of downtown Toronto with 200 care packages with a group of people, young people. We are doing this. We are walking the streets of downtown Toronto with one good intention in mind, that is, I am here to extend my hand to those who are suffering on the street. So right. We are going to
life of service. Well, you know, your message of love and kindness and compassion, understanding, yeah. empathy, and wisdom. It's not just for Canadians. I think it's a universal yeah. message. And that's what I love yeah. about you, is that you help yeah. so many people, not just the people in Toronto. Everyone yeah. in the studio is yeah. nodding their head about this. Now, talk to us a little bit. You had talked to us the last time you called in about meditation as an internal yeah. medicine for peace and well-being. Yeah. A lot of people think yeah. that a pill fixes everything. But yeah. knowing what I know now about meditation, because my husband is also meditating, he is saying yeah. that he's feeling so much better when he finishes his meditation. He He feels like a weight is lifted off of him. And he feels like a lot of people should be doing this. But how do we get more people to understand that it does work and it does help your mind, your body, your soul, and your spirit?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, Sita. You know, as you know, I have been teaching meditation for past 30 years in North America. And I still continue conducting weekly mindfulness sessions, not only here at our center, across GTA, Greater Toronto Area. And now why? Because, first of all, I have experienced the great benefits of meditation, and since I love people, I'm teaching this technique to everyone. You know, see, the one thing people should be mindful of, you know, to heal your body, you need medication, like medicine. To heal your mind, you need meditation. To heal your mind, there's a way to do it. You know, meditation is all about being right here now, embracing yourself with kindness. So there is a simple technique I teach to the public that is known as SSMK meditation technique. The first S stands for slowly. Second S stands for silently. M stands for mindfully. K stands for kindfully. So I'm kindly encouraging people to find at least 15 minutes for themselves. You know, people may not have plenty of time, but they can manage to have 10 or 15 minutes. So in that 15 minutes, you become a turtle. I don't know whether I have time to tell this story. Doing meditation is a way of becoming a turtle or adopting the turtle attitude. Because every time a turtle detects the danger in the environment, it knows how to protect itself. So to protect itself, it goes into its own hard shell. So in the same way, to protect ourselves from daily stress, anxieties, depression, sadness, grief, fear, guilt, etc. And present moment practice is the most important thing. So you go inside, you withdraw, you go inside your own heart shell, that is the present moment. So then breath is the life-saving mechanism. That is the best medicine. So there is a way to breathe. So what I'm teaching people is the art of breathing with this SSMK technique. So you just sit down, you sit comfortably, and then you could assume a general sitting posture or half lotus sitting posture or full lotus sitting posture. Then you could have your back straight but neither too rigid nor too loose. And then you could rest your hands in your lap. And then you could simply slowly close your eyes, then take a deep breath and relax. And you could continue taking deep breaths until you feel relaxed and comfortable. And then keep your mind in between the nose tip and upper lip, and then let the mind watch and feel the breath entering and leaving through the nostrils. So simply allow yourself to breathe in and out slowly. The way the turtle keeps walking slowly and moving forward, in the same way, you could allow yourself to breathe in and out slowly. And as you keep breathing slowly, be mindful to breathe in and out silently. That means, you know, how we put the our phone on silent mode. In the same way, we could put ourselves in the silent mode and silently breathe in, breathe out. So when you do this breathing in and out silently, it helps your mind become very still. And still mind is the source of energy. Still mind is a source of happiness. still mind is a source of joy, peace, and all the positive things. This is what
so you get
know.
In touch with your inner self.
Yeah, and you
inner
can
self,
shine.
Yeah,
you,
mind, yeah.
You mentioned shining light onto the areas that are worrisome. Can you help me understand that?
Yeah. Then what happens is that the mind remains in the present moment. You become worrisome. You feel a lot of stress or feel sad. When you allow your mind to go around and stay in the past, in the future. So when you bring your mind to the present moment and help the mind stay inside your own heart shell, that is the true power of mindfulness, and it has the power to dissolve and melt all the stress, all worries and all the negativities.
Is it a place
Is
it a place you can find answers to things that are questions that have been bothering you?
Yeah, because it gives you clarity. Meditation helps you to develop mental clarity and stability. So this is why we encourage people to practice meditation.
Yeah,
yeah. So Dr. Sarinpala, you also spoke with I read something online where you had spoken about cultivation and on how it's about shifting and thinking, and you had likened it to like having a garden. And in order for that garden to be beautiful and your mind to be flowing with positive energy, you've got to take out the weeds from that garden. So talk to us a little bit. How do we maintain a continuous light? And explain to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about cultivation.
Yeah, so there are four steps to cultivate this beautiful garden. Meditation is all about making an effort. You have to try. If you don't make effort, nothing happens. You have to work out. So you have to make effort in four steps. The first step is prevention. So that means you have to help yourself prevent from unwholesome thoughts or unwholesome emotions that have not arisen yet. And let's say all this time unwholesome thoughts popped up in the mind. Now, second step, be mindful to make an effort to eliminate those unwholesome thoughts one by one and slowly. And then third step, make an effort to cultivate the wholesome thoughts which have not arisen yet. And then the fourth step is make an effort to sustain or maintain the wholesome thoughts you have already cultivated. Now, the first two, prevention and elimination of the unwholesome thoughts, help you become healthy 50%. And the rest of the 50% depends on the third and fourth step. Then you have to cultivate wholesome thoughts and then maintain them. So now, how do you cultivate wholesome thoughts? For example, you could simply say, with the ingoing outgoing breathing, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be free. So now, if let's say all these years, you have not cultivated such thoughts, such positive emotions. Now you make an effort to fix your attention to these positive thoughts and see whether you can sustain them wherever you go. Whenever something bothers you, let's say when you become upset, when you get annoyed, at that moment, take the breath and relax and just say to yourself, may I be free from this anger.
It seems like you need to tell the whole world this, because we're living in a time right now, Dr. Banti Sarinpala, the urban Buddhist monk. We're living in a time when you see people driving their cars and they're experiencing road rage. You go to the store, they're rushing around in public, they're hitting you with their carts. I was driving today, someone is honking at someone else, and the person is trying to cross two lanes to get to a left lane. I'm like, well, tell me, what has happened to human beings that everyone is in such a rush? How can we help people to slow down?
Yeah, well, we can't. This is, I think, Sita, you're already doing it through your program now. You know, like I try my best to do this to help people, and you're doing your best. So now imagine if every person continues to do this practice and encourage others to do the same. I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful. The world will become better and better, brighter and brighter, and eventually we can make the world the brightest and happiest planet. So it's like, you know, in my book, Are You Kindful? I'm telling a story of the 100 monkeys. And I think people should be reading this story. It's a beautiful story. And this is how we bring the positive change. It begins with one person, you know. So as we say, the 1,000 candles can be lit from one candle. So you be the person of all this positivity. You be the happy person, peaceful person. Make yourself healthy and strong. And then, as a happy, healthy, peaceful person, when you start walking around and smiling, guess what? Others will be interested in you. Hey, yeah, you're looking so happy.
Yeah, because that's contagious, right? They say positivity is contagious. So tell our listening audience, now, so you left Bangladesh and you went to Canada, and then you furthered your studies. You got your undergrad at the University of Toronto, and then you ended up in the city of Mississauga, Toronto. Did you already have the mindfulness and the insight to meditate and help yourself, because you were away from your family? You were going through a lot. You left Bangladesh and stayed in Toronto, and I see you go back and forth, and you do spread the joy. How did you do that and get involved in helping so many people? You are acclaimed as the urban Buddhist monk, that the police loves you, the community loves you. You've received so many awards from the city of Ontario and from the legislature. Yeah. How did you do this?
Thanks to my grandfather, my parents, my monastic teachers. Actually, I consider myself so fortunate to have amazing people in my life, in my childhood. My grandparents and my parents, and they taught me, they planted the seed of kindness in my heart, in my childhood. Then at the age of 10, I became a novice monk in Bangladesh, and from there, my kind and great teacher, he's actually living, he's 100 years now. So he sent me to Sri Lanka. So I ended up in Sri Lanka before coming to Canada. In Sri Lanka, I received my monastic training and education. Even there, my higher ordination monastic teachers were very kind. They were very prominent monks in the country who were always there to help people, bringing the positive change. So those great masters had big impact on me. And then when I came to Canada, I just continued kindful activities. I never stop. I never stop practicing meditation. I never stop teaching meditation. I never stop doing the act of kindness, and I never stop encouraging people to do the acts of kindness. And even right until today, you know, I have been doing all this because all credit should be going to my grandparents, my parents, my monastic teachers. And there is one, my first monastic teacher actually spent his whole life helping the people. Even now he's doing the same thing.
Right, and I noticed that your practice, what you do, counseling and all that in Canada, it's not limited to only Hindus or Buddhists. You spread your wings, so to speak, to all faiths, all people come into the monastery and the temple, and you administer to so many. Talk to us a little bit about some of the families that come into the temple that you administer to, because a lot of people think that you know, that you that only Buddhists or Hindus could go into the temple. But you have busted up that myth. You help everyone.
Well, for 30 years, you know, majority of my students are non-Buddhists. These are our friends and students who are Christians, who are Catholics, who are Muslims, who are Jews, who are Hindus, you know. So majority of my student population are non-Buddhist. So now why? Because they know that I'm not forcing them to become a Buddhist monk or Buddhist. So what I'm teaching, a universal technique that anyone can become a better person.
I learned a little bit of what you're teaching too in Bodhisattva training. Through the shamans that are down here. And the cool part, to your credit, the cool part was that most of the people that were in that class with me were Franciscan nuns and Catholic priests and so it was really cool because it was this communion of fellowship learning about how to control.
All about enlightenment.
Enlightenment,
right?
Exactly. Just, right.
That's the most beautiful thing about Buddha, right? So you are known as the urban Buddhist monk. How did you end up getting that title? Because I'm sure that a lot of people are very envious of that title.
So I think people around the world know me now as the urban Buddhist monk. They know who it is. So it was one of my students, he's a Caucasian Canadian friend. So he started coming to my weekly meditation sessions. And one day we were having this friendly conversation over tea. And so we were talking about the monastic practice. So I talked about two types of monk, is a forest monk and the village monk. And then he said, Bhante, you're not a forest monk anymore. You're an urban monk, and we should call you an urban monk.
Yeah, because you have electricity, you have a home, you have highways and byways, vehicles, the CN Tower, Niagara Falls. You are an urban monk. So before you leave, our dear friend, Dr. Bhante Sarampalla, can you give our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the website or where they can get your book and the name of the book and the name, if they wanted to look you up in Canada and come to one of the temples, how can we find you?
People can find this book online at Amazon. And all you have to search for is Are You Kindful? So that's the title of the book, Are You Kindful? How Your Practice of Kindfulness Can Build a Happy and Peaceful Nation. And also they can find this book at Chapters of Indigo. Or if they come to see me at our center in Mississauga, Toronto, Canada, they can get a signed copy, hard cover copy from me. And of course, I'm located in the Buddhist Meditation Center in Mississauga, Toronto. And they can find all my details on my mission website, CanadaAMindfulNation.ca, or my own personal website, UrbanBuddhistMonk.org.
Are you still a Buddhist chaplain with the Toronto Police Service? Are you still teaching the police how to be mindful and kind and all that good stuff?
Yes, I'm still being offering those services, and I'm still the Buddhist chaplain of the Toronto Police Service, and I'm actually going to meet the Toronto Police Chief this month. And we are going to have a conversation over how we can have more police officers with this mindfulness meditation.
Why can't you become the urban Buddhist monk of the world? How can we get that petition going? Because, you know, we see people all over the world. The crime rates are high. Parents are not guiding their children. Teachers are giving up. You know, children are being raised by children on the streets. It's almost like we need one person to be the father of guidance, and I appoint you, Dr. Banti Sarampala, to give guidance to the entire world.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So kind. And then, in fact, of course, there are a lot of people who are saying, Banti, you are not just the urban Buddhist monk, you are the global Buddhist monk. That is because I'm not just helping the people in Canada, also in other countries, including Africa. And I do a lot of humanitarian projects in addition to teaching meditation. And in fact, I also visit the United States time to time. And I can give you good news, actually. End of this year, maybe in December, I'm hoping to visit Florida. I think.
Oh, good. Tell us when so we can come see you. And we can say, we know this guy.
Yeah. That's right. And Sita will make you curry chicken.
He know he doesn't eat meat.
He's She'll make something curry. Curry vegetables.
Right. I wanted to tell you, too, you have a smile that lights up the entire world. And I just want to say, you know, I know that comes from your upbringing and your family and your background. And you have shared it with all of us. Every time I see you on Facebook, whether you're visiting home or you're doing some service in Toronto, you're always smiling and happy. And that registers with all your followers, such as myself. But I really thank you for calling in, and Ellen will take it from here.
Well, thank you so much for being with us and sharing the airwaves here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFab.
Are you longing
care
for a taste of Louisiana?
Lizette's
Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in our sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over the planet.
That's right. On AM 1510 WWBC, that's 1510 WWBC.com. You can listen, hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, all the archives are there. And then we put our blog up each and every week on our CedaMediaInc.com website page, as well as all of our social media.
Right. And I'm not sure why I'm clapping in the studio, but I am clapping.
We're having a great day.
And I think it's because we just spoke with Dr. Bhante Sarampella about meditation and
kindness.
Being mindful as a healing technique yeah. and being kind and having compassion and empathy and all these good things for people. And it's a great segue to lead right into our second segment, because my second guest today, Shaniqua is her first name, but she goes by Shan Rose. She lives right here in Florida in the Paramore area with her young son and has lived in the Central Florida area since her high school years. She attended Poinciana High School and holds a master's degree in public administration from the American Public University System. And Shaniqua actually has a nonprofit here. It's called Change for the Community. So we're going to talk to her a little bit because, like me, she does get involved in politics every once in a while. And we all know that a lot of people say that life is not politics and they don't want to get involved. But at some point, you have to say, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, how much you pay for mortgage, how much is your rent, what do you have running water, do you have electricity, who's paying for it? How much are you paying? Are your kids in daycare? Do they have enough teachers? How much are they paid? Do you pay taxes? How much do you pay in taxes? Does the war in the Middle East affect the gasoline prices in the U.S.? You bet it does. Foreign policy does affect. So Shaniqua, like myself, we were having a conversation, and we were talking about now what? What happens in 2024 with so many people who are saying, my vote just don't count. I don't have good choices. So we're going to talk to Shaniqua a little bit and find out what's going on with her and how what she's doing to increase voter turnout, no matter who people decide to vote for, Democrat or Republican, but we should exercise the right to vote. So thank you for taking the time to call in and chat with us a little bit. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Good afternoon, Shan Rose. It's a very busy, heavy, hectic 2024 political cycle. Locally, municipalities have elections coming up in March. The primary election will be in August, and the general election will be in November. So just, you know, busy. When you started going on the list of different things that impact your life that are political, I think the most simplest that I tell people is if there's a sidewalk missing, if there's a pothole in the street, that's government facilities and that's government responsibilities. So it's one of those things where people say, I'm not going to get in politics, but as much as they complain, where they're sitting at a red light and wondering why the red light takes so long to turn green, those are done by government. So I think we all have to take the time to
think,
analyze,
yeah.
to think and then analyze how much are we willing to get involved or not get involved. And the least you get, the smallest way to get involved is ensuring you register to vote. And you vote in every election cycle, which takes place every single year.
Well, I want to applaud you for having the ability to encourage people to vote. And also, with your foundation, your nonprofit, Change for the Community, you are creating better neighborhoods. You are doing community outreach. You are building unity and pride in the young people and showing them the light. Like, it's not enough to complain. You have to get involved. What happened that made you start this nonprofit? Something must have happened and you said, I'm going to do this.
So I moved into the Paramore neighborhood about 5 years ago, and I had the caveat of also working for the city of Orlando within a department that kind of oversees the production of the, you know, economic development and creating solutions to challenges. And I realized that some of the challenges are not government. They are, how does a nonprofit facilitate government needs and meeting government needs. And some of it is that the government can't be every place at every moment of the day, but nonprofit and community members can come together. So for me, it was, so Paramore is in the middle of three venues are in the middle of the community, whichever way you want to slice it, because on the outside you have the Amway Center and you have Camping World Stadium, and then it's not Amway Center, I'll take that back, the Kia Center, and then in the heart of Paramore you have the soccer stadium. So what, one of the things that, like, really, I would say, it really got on my nerves is environmental. And so for me, being in the heart of highways and a lot of tourists coming in, we did a lot of trash. And so it started with getting some youth in the neighborhood and working through and working with cleaning up trash in the neighborhood and letting them build pride in the neighborhood to, like, be recognized that this is where we live and we want to keep it clean. And then it kind of evolved from there, because I got to really learn what the children were experiencing, and then figure out, like, how do I address some of their needs, whether it's food, whether it's they had never been to a basketball game with the center being right in the middle of the community. So just overall, it's like, okay, well, this is the way it must get done. And so most organizations have built their structure with what you would call donating or gifting to the community in the form of a nonprofit. So I have formed Change for the Community to be able to partner with larger organizations to make a better community.
Right, and you are helping with things such as homelessness and community-based crime reduction. You're fighting for equality, not just for the citizens that lived in Paramore, but when you clean up that neighborhood, you help the entire state, you help the other entire country, because you instill so much more pride in those, in the youths that you're helping. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I heard that you were a survivor as well of gun violence, and that changed your mind as well as about the community in which people live and work and play in.
Yeah, so going on 13 years ago this year, summer, my husband was killed coming outside of a nightclub. And the way in which we live life, the average person likes to party, likes to enjoy themselves. And one of the things that was a changing point for me was looking at the safety mechanisms by which people are entertained, whether it's they're going to a nightclub or they're going to an arena to where there are going to be thousands of people. It's ensuring that there's a, you know, general template of what safety looks like, whether it's, you know, clear mesh, clear bag so we can see everything inside of your bag, whether it's more lighting on the street or more lighting in the parking garage, or holding parking garage owners accountable. But those are things that government has to do. And so, like, you find, like, I found my space in life where I was like, do you know, how much do you really want to get involved in government? Sometimes it's, you know, you can go challenge government, but have you ever been on the inside to get a clearer picture of what they may not know? You may not have someone who works for a government agency who has ever experienced gun violence except what they see on TV. So they may not have the same, I would say, they may not have the same drive, or they may not, it might not be top priority. It might be something where it's like, it may not be on the top five list. It may be number six on the list. But if you've got, you know, it was one of those, it was a point in my life where I could say, well, I can move it from six to one, or I can move it from six to five. And the more I can move it up to become a priority, then we can address it. Fortunately enough, in 2015, City of Orlando looked at nightlife and said, how do we create a safer community? So again, it's working with government, it's going through life experiences and realizing how can you fix that life experience that you've gone through to help someone else or to prevent someone else from experiencing the same thing.
Well, you know, back in the islands, there's a saying that everything happens for a reason, you know, and sometimes when things happen, people become advocates. And you have worked in the private sector, and you've worked in the public sector, and you know how to talk to people, you know how to get things done, but most importantly, you know how to take action. And that's what we need. A lot of people, when bad things happen to them, some people, they go into a cocoon, but you decided that you are going to put your time and effort and energy, expertise into your area in Paramore and do things for the young people there and build a stronger community. So where do we go from here as a country? Because what I'm reading in the newspapers and what I'm hearing is that some people are saying, well, I'm not going to vote. Some are saying that they don't have good choices, and some are concerned about the war. Some are concerned about economic changes. Where do we go from here?
So, you know, I see the memes on social media where people say, I feel like the election for 2024 should be like a relationship and we should just take a break, right?
Yes.
And I say that it's not okay to take a break when it comes to who's in charge of this country and how do you move this country forward and what does continue to build upon what's here and what's existing. I will say in the last, and this is from personal, like, grant reading, someone who reads the newspaper, who watches the evolution of, like, opportunities for communities, I would say, in my personal opinion, when we look at, and I'll give one of the simplest ones, a lot of people in the last 2 years have received a reduction on their internet bill, and that was done through Congress, and that was passed, and that was obviously something that the president signed off on. Understanding that people need access to internet in today's world where people are working from home, where doctors and dentists are having telehealth appointments. And so that, like, that's something simple to look at. I don't think I've ever experienced that in all the years of my life where the government recognized the need for access to internet and said, we'll provide you a discount because we understand our economic hardship. So I think it's looking at the opportunities that we're seeing today and we're seeing available and say, have we had those before? Can we continue down this path or should we continue down this path?
So along those same lines, there's a lot of controversy with the student loan debt, and many are concerned how it's going to impact younger voters. How do we keep their support?
So here's what I would say. Anytime you're in politics, so the hardship that most people don't understand about politics and politicians, the person who's typically running, they have visions and they have ideas of how things may be better, right? So it's then in their mind to say, how do I accomplish this? Sometimes you get in this instant, and then sometimes it's gradual. So when we talk about student loan debt, we have in the last couple of years seen different program changes that have allowed individuals to get their student loan debt canceled. But you have to understand, it's a process. It's one of those situations where, you know, in life, we've all waited online. And I'm going to say this, as an Islander, like, I'm a third-generation Islander. I'm third-generation immigrant. My family's from the island of St. Lucia. And so immigration laws when my family first migrated here 60, 70 years ago are not the same, but someone stood in line and continued to fight for immigration reform. Sometimes we won't necessarily see reform during our lifetime, but because it's been put on the books and because it's been a thought process that an elected official, someone in authority said this is what we need to change, we will get there gradually. Change doesn't happen overnight, and I think we have to realize that. So I think I think what has to happen is continue to show young people that here's what has happened. Here's what I've been doing. Here's where I want to be, and I still need your support. I think that has to be the message.
Well, but you know, you hit the nail on the head, because I know people that complains there's not enough staffing in hospitals and nursing homes. And then I would say, well, what are you doing about it? When you vote, do you think about this? Because there's a lot of people that are on the southern border. They want to come to the United States. And granted, we cannot take everybody in. We just can't. It's just so many people. But there are some who are asylum seekers that we probably should have them go in front of a judge. And if those people can come to the United States and work in the healthcare industry, that's a win-win for us. But you just can't turn everybody away. There are some people that could come and they can work. But I know you and I had talked about this, and there's a lot going on that border that's not even fair when it comes to the races or religions or the way people are treated either. Some people have it a little bit easier than others as well. And you and I had talked about this.
So here's what I'm going to say. So that, and it's one of those, you know, do you want to have a conversation and potentially get canceled? What I will say is charting out what a dream looks like and a vision looks like is what's important. And I think the gripe that you're hearing a lot about the immigration solution, so to speak, because that is, it's a solution. It's what some cities and some states have decided, this is how we're going to solve this problem. I think what has to happen is a plan of action. So just like when a person files to come into this country legally, they tell you where they're going to go, who they're going to be with, what they're going to do, et cetera. I think that's the, and we may not know that. Like, that might be something that is being done on the immigration side to keep track of individuals coming. But on the outside, all we hear is X amount of millions of dollars are being spent, or X amount of billions of dollars are being spent. Do we know that we're tracking their path? Do we know that, like you said, if we've got 20 people cross the border right now, do we know what those 20 individuals intend to do? Have we checked that? You know, and the hardship is there's really no background check. And I think for some individuals, that's the problem.
Yeah, because when you come in legally, you have to have a stack of paperwork. They have you a history and physical. You have to have a character from the police officers that you're a person of good standing, your bank account, why are you coming? I mean, they check you. I mean, you have so many checks and balances on before you come legally to the United States, and then you have people at the border that are not being checked, like you say, and they come in.
And I think that's the biggest, but that's the biggest gripe. Like, who's holding these individuals to any sort of standards?
And if accountable, no like, standards, who's holding them accountable, and who's checking
exactly
to see who's coming in? Well, I know, I mean, and that's a problem that I think they're going to be trying to fix that, because not everyone who comes to the border is a candidate for asylum either, right? You have to show proof
mm-hmm.
that your life is in danger. Just saying that you're coming to the United States for a better life, it's not going to cut it in from what I'm hearing, what they're discussing right now in Washington, D.C., but we'll have to see how that plays out. But anyways, where do we go from here? President Biden just secured South Carolina. And how do we secure the other states? How do we get more young people? I mean, younger Democrats are more liberal and they're anti-institutional. So many Democrats are saying, well, they argue with people that I don't believe in this institution or I don't believe in that. How do we get them to change their minds?
I think right now what has to happen is kitchen table conversation. You have to look at what are the young people complaining about? What are young people saying that this is a need or a desire? And how do we fix it? Whether it's access to education, you and I discussed briefly, I believe if we treated child care from birth like we did the hospital system and the medical system where there's a set fee schedule, I think if we started with education from birth, from the time a child is born, they have access and the ability to be able to get an education, I think we create a flat line of standards in this country as a whole. So I think we have to say, okay, what's the general consensus? Where do we stand with our young people? What are they concerned about? And how do we fit that across the board? How do we say we're not only going to have a focal point on LGBTQ rights, but we're also going to talk about rental. We're also going to talk about education. We're also going to talk about...
Well, it's a culture war, right? Sometimes I feel like the Democrats don't message properly. A lot of people are saying it's about the economy. It's about sending your kid to school and knowing to get a quality public education. It's about having mm-hmm. daycares that are run well and have people to take care of these children that everyone says they want you to have a child. But then once you have a kid and the parent has to go back to work, who's watching the child? You have to have mm-hmm. workers. So like you say, yes, it's not so much about the culture wars. It's about how much is your rent? How much are you paying for electricity? What happens when the weather gets cold? Do you have a way to check your cars and your tires when it says low air pressure? People need to talk about kitchen table topics and have conversations with their loved ones about financial literacy, education, the environment. Like you say, you can't just say you want somebody to have a child. What are you willing to put out once the kid is born? Because the kid needs health insurance, needs a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
The parents need a job. And you're a single mom. How did you handle all of this?
I made a way. For me, it was education. I was fortunate that my vision was from a kid. So my grandmother, God rest her soul, she worked for the government. So it was always like working governmental. That was always a thing for me. So it was like, you're always going to get the best benefit. Then you kind of create your means and ways of life based on that. Like I grew up like not living outside of my means. So if I wanted to do a certain thing, I budget. And financial literacy is a thing that I grew to understand because I was a homeless teenager. I decided that I was going to leave home at 17 And I had to figure out a way. And it was, you know, I became homeless because what I was saying, I didn't know how to budget. But you see, things take time. So that happened to me 20 plus years ago. But now our students get financial literacy. So again, so when we talk about, like earlier, we're talking about student loan debt. Things take time. But as long as there's a goal, there's a vision in place, we could work out the kinks. We could, you know, pull the tooth and nail. We can keep on pulling and pulling and pulling and yanking until we get to what's the desired goal.
Yes. And, you know, you had West Indian grandparents in your life. So you know that old saying, don't put your hat where you can't reach it. They teach mm-hmm. you. They teach you how to save. They teach you how to listen. They guide you. But again, it's up to us. Some of us don't listen, right? So with the remaining 30 seconds, what would you tell the young people out there who feel like their vote don't count, who feel like their mind is bogged down with the war, who feel like gas prices are rising, that every other country has universal health care except the United States? What do you say to these young people who are saying, hey, give us a reason why we should wake up and go and vote by mail or vote early or go to the precinct and vote?
Change doesn't happen overnight, and progress is taking place. Each area that you find that you're struggling in or you're speaking up, go look at the recent data and see what has changed, because change is happening. It's just not happening as rapidly. So it's like, hold the faith and continue to hold individuals accountable, and you'll see the change that you want to see.
I'm telling you, that's a saying that we all say, you know, we write it on Facebook, but when you think about it, when it says, be the change you wish to see. If you think about each of those words, that gives you the guideline on how to live, how to wake up every day and understand that life is a business. From the diapers they put on you in the hospital when you're born to the briefs you're wearing when you leave the planet, right? So people need to understand that life is politics whether they like it or not, and get involved. If you don't want to vote for a politician, get involved with a nonprofit such as yours. So give us your website if someone wanted to look up Change for the Community and see all the positive changes you are trying to make in your community in Paramore or London.
Change for the Community, so changforthecommunity.com. You can find me on all social media platforms, Shan Rose. I'm probably sure I'm the only one. I have a couple of pages on Instagram and Facebook. And I'm usually responsive when people send messages or send, you know, DMs or they comment on my page.
That's fantastic. And thank you for everything that you're doing for the community. We're going to make sure we share all of this information on our social medias as well as our website pages. Again, Sita, another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Please, fans, tune in each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time right here on 1510 WWBC.
Thank you.